And on Wednesdays, we talk to men about money from Kingston Wealth Management. Our friends Kevin Kingston and John Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management from 10 to 11. Gentlemen, there has been a lot of market activity since we last spoke.
There always is a lot of market activity and no shortage of it this past week or so. Susan.
Up, down, up, down, up, down, but still incredibly overall up.
Yeah, the up seems to be reigning the day. We did see a little volatility last week with Kevin and I were talking off the air with you about the newscast that was unfortunately irresponsibly brought out that didn't have enough backup, and it shook the market for a very, very short time. But by the end of the day, it had already regained that, Kevin, and then some. Still pretty positive.
Positive this morning, slightly, John. You know, as you said, just a little bit of volatility, and you know, you hate those things when it's not correct information that's being disseminated. But overall, Susan, the Dow is up almost 23% year to date. S&P is up over 18% year to date.
And how is the Nasdaq? Because I have a question about that.
27 plus. So
okay.
You know, those are phenomenal returns. And as always, remind your listeners, don't count on those year after year. It's a great year. You kind of celebrate that.
Mm-hmm.
And you take the good with the bad, John. I don't think we can say that enough.
No.
You know, we had some bad years in there 10 years ago. We've come out of that in a remarkable way. Whether you like the current administration or not, you got to give them a lot of credit for what they're doing.
Right,
I mean,
now.
A lot of positive economic news.
I need a beginner money lesson before we get into the hot topics that are on today, including the Senate's version of the past tax bill, what you know about that, and going to our full market update. Kevin and John have always taught me that even though we get excited in the headlines about the Dow Jones numbers,
right,
it's actually the S&P 500 and other numbers that are a better indicator of the market.
It's a broader.
Somebody asked that question last week. Why is that? Kevin, and it's because the Dow is only 30 industrial stocks, where the S&P, as you know, how many stocks, Susan?
All of them.
500.
500.
Oh, no. Now, my question, though, is specifically about the NASDAQ, because now that it's we've changed formatics just a little bit before we talk to our friends at Bates Commodities, I will read the financial numbers. So I'm trying to read them with authority and intelligence about what's happening in the market. And when I spent all last week talking about up numbers for the Dow, up numbers for the S&P, there were multiple times I was giving the current market status where the NASDAQ was down, and I didn't understand the difference and why that would happen. Could you explain for beginners like me?
Well, you can think of NASDAQ as primarily tech. So you've seen a lot. You've seen some volatility in tech the last few weeks in particular, but year to date, again, it's been a very strong positive year for tech. And I'd also add financials, John.
Yeah.
I think we ought to comment.
Well, I think you're right, Kevin. I think one of the things, Susan, that's helped that side of the financials is that there's been some favorable rulings with respect to what small banks are going to be able to avoid some of the being lumped in with the big mega banks. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, what it did was it drove their cost up. It drove their time dedicated to compliance issues. Not that it's not important, but it was overkill for what small community banks under $10 billion would be
right.
faced with. So that's good. I talked to one of my colleagues, a friend of ours, Dave Wampler, and he was talking about already they're looking at, you know, possibly less allocation towards that area, possibly less money towards maybe FDIC insurance. So they'll still be adequately charged and covered. But you know, that was a mistake under the Dodd-Frank deal when they lumped everybody into one bag of groceries. And it was a poor decision. And I think it's being rectified right now. So positive news, you know, for the markets.
And yet we're still also seeing the topic that I know it seems so awkward is this conversation about Bitcoin is in every headline. And it was even the subject matter of my favorite television show, Big Bang Theory, on Thursday. And it, my husband watched that show with me, and he said, what is Bitcoin? I hear you talking about Bitcoin. I said, all I can answer is it has something to do with blockchain, and it's not necessarily real money. Yet I understand the Winklevoss twins, who made a lot of money after the
Facebook
mm-hmm. Lawsuits were done, have invested very heavily in these Bitcoins and want to try and make an ETF out of it, which is a term that Kevin taught me about exchange-traded funds. So is that a conversation you guys are having?
I'll let Kevin comment because he does that for a living. But I think it's like, and I'm sure you're probably going to say, be very, very careful when you're talking about one indice or one issue.
you know, you've seen a lot of smart Wall Street investors now get on board with Bitcoin, but it, you know, it's one of those things that it's hard to define. You know, what's the market share for that? What would it look like in the future? So you have to put a John in the speculative category to some extent. You know, there's been some major thefts of that currency, if you want to call it a currency.
And it's it's not backed by gold or silver the way that our regular currency is.
Well, and talk about volatility. I don't know if you saw the volatility of Bitcoin the last few weeks or months.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's some huge volatility. And part of that is nobody knows how to price it, really. Now, that's part of the problem.
So I'll go back. I saw the Sunday morning show, and they interviewed Warren Buffett, did a segment. It was just brilliant. And just to reaffirm what his idea is, find great companies. That's what he does, and he invests in them. He doesn't get them all right, doesn't get them always at the perfect time, but just find solid companies and own pieces of that.
He's always said, and he said in that interview, think of it like you're owning a piece of a well-managed company.
Right.
That's a good way to look at it.
If anybody tries to sell you, by the way, a coin itself made out of any type of metal that says a capital letter B on it,
right.
that's not actual
it.
Bitcoin, I'm worried that that's going to be the new scam of the future.
Well, there are so many good things that Kevin pointed out to talk about, and I want to just point out a few here this morning. One is we talked about consumer confidence, but they're really acting on that confidence, Kevin. I mean, we saw the third quarter growth of 3.3%, but it's translating into people really getting out and spending. I saw a statistic where it said that they're looking at somewhere between $680 and $700 billion going to be spent over this Christmas buying season.
Because I've been very, very nice.
Yeah, and I think it shows folks are out there confident. They're confident in their employment. They're confident in their ability to perhaps, as we're going to talk about the tax thing, Kevin, that maybe they're going to see a little better reduction along the line. Across most folks will see that. So I think that's a very when you see consumer confidence soaring, it's great, but it's even better when they take it to that step where they feel confident enough. You know, it hasn't been that many years ago, Kevin, we talked about how people were just reluctant to let loose of anything other than what they had to buy. And now we're kind of in that stage where people are out there comfortable.
You go through the credit crisis, John, where credit's tight and people are very concerned, and in a good way, it helped. You saw Americans return to a higher savings rate than we'd seen in a long time. Now you're seeing a little more consumer consumption again. I want to also add, really back to the boom levels of 07 with the median sales price of existing homes.
Yes.
And that's risen now bigger than what we saw in 2007. And then you're also seeing, I think you were going to mention, or I will, John, some other very positive housing signals.
Yeah. New home sales. You know, Kevin, one of the things that strikes me, not only here locally but nationally, is you're starting to see inventory being used up. Do you remember when we talked about during the crisis, we said until you get that backlog of inventory out of there, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Well, now all of a sudden you're hearing reports that there's less and less inventory. And as we know from our Economics 101, you know, the less things are, the more expensive they get. So
I think the new home sales, John, were up over 6% in October. I haven't seen a November number yet, but October,
solid.
Very strong.
You mentioned something to me yesterday, Kevin, talking about the local area and some of your contacts were a little more bullish, not positive of everything's going to happen, but at least felt like the next 5-10 years might see a little bit more activity here in Bloomington.
The signals are that you may see State Farm bring some people back the next 4 to 5 years, maybe at a rate of 400 or 500 a year, hopefully. And then made the Pantograph, was probably on your news also, Susan. Brand Industries said they plan to hire 500 people.
Just positive.
Normal.
So very
real strong.
Very positive. Manufacturing sectors, Kevin, we talk about how strong that's been. They're still at a hectic pace right now. The index continues to go up. When you see the manufacturing sector in this country going up, and along with the possibility that it could even get stronger as we get this corporate tax deal done, hopefully by year end, if not maybe shortly after, that's a really good sign. And you've already touched on Wall Street. It's just been one of those years when I talked with Mike and Chris about it and asked them a little bit, what are your clients and what do people who are opening up their 401k statements, they see a couple, two, three back-to-back years. If you would have been diligent making those contributions like you guys talk about, you're going to have been rewarded more than likely.
Definitely.
Regardless of where you were across the line.
And not just this year, John. I think, you know, we don't want to think too short-term, but you look at those contributions that you made to 401k this year, the last few years, and if you're not planning to use those funds until retirement 10, 20, 30 years from now, that's where that really pays off. We keep talking about, and I think the message is clear, with contributions drive results of what you'll have in the future more than returns. Returns are secondary.
Yeah.
So you've got to focus on socking that money away, Susan, in 401k.
I'm working on it.
I wanted to give Susan something that we'll give her a quiz next week or two, see if she remembers how many stocks are in the S&P
500
and how many equities are in the NASDAQ.
All of them.
Good answer.
All of the tech stocks.
3,000 plus.
3,000 plus.
Hey,
that's not a specific number.
We're going to give you most credit.
I'm trying to learn every single time we do the show.
One more quick story before we go to break. My lovely wife sent me this information yesterday. She's always looking out for us, and it was a story about Illinois that caught our attention. And we mentioned the problems with Illinois, and I can kind of maybe equate some numbers to it. Illinois' problem with wealth flight isn't just persisting, it's getting worse. That's the takeaway from new data released from the IRS on November 30th in terms of both people and income. The land of Lincoln saw a record-breaking exodus in the 2015-2016 tax year. Illinois saw a net loss of 42,000 tax returns to other states in 1 year, representing a net loss of 86,100 people. According to the IRS, that's an all-time high. Illinois lost $4.75 billion in income to other states on net. Kevin, those are you mentioned numbers like that, and we go back and we talk about how poorly this state has been functioning since I've been long, long time, and it's not getting any better. But people who look at those numbers and they see that's reality, and they see these other governors out there literally going on TV encouraging and thanking Illinois for being so inept.
The billboards in Chicago,
it's embarrassing.
Are
Indiana. Indiana's the same way. So, but anyway, that's something I think that we just need to keep in mind as we're looking at this state. When you take politics seriously, folks, because it's a serious business, and we're all paying for it in one way or the other.
Let's take a short break. We'll come back with more from Kevin Kingston and John Rudy, Kingston Wealth Management. Still on the show today, they will tell us what they know about the Senate's version of the so far past tax bill and how it could affect you, and more on what's going on in the marketplace. You know, I haven't gotten to ask my oil question in a while. That's coming up here on WJBC.
Have you more than a click away, on the air and online, WJBC. And WJBC.com.
1026. It seems like every guest I have in the studio, I ask the same thing. So I'll ask this of John Rudy and Kevin Kingston, tongue in cheek, just to find out if maybe there's an answer when I don't expect there to be one. Any holiday gift ideas that you could gift from Kingston Wealth Management?
Any holiday gift ideas?
Yeah, everybody is usually selling a gift certificate or something you could do for the holidays. Is there a holiday gift that we could give with Kingston Wealth Management?
I don't know. I don't know if you could do that or not.
Could we give somebody their first appointment free?
Well, they get that already.
Oh, come on, John.
Huh?
We're doing this well here.
They get that already. We give them
it. Put it in a gift certificate and say, I've made your first appointment.
John likes to say it's Christmas all year.
Christmas all year long. Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, there was a way to do that. But Christmas and Hanukkah is a time where the family gets together, and sometimes you've got to discuss some pretty serious things.
You know what's interesting, and this is a true story, Kevin, because the last couple of years you've had clients who sometimes the only time that they can get the family together to talk about financial issues, estate issues are around the holidays. And I know you
That's
had a
right.
couple of that
yeah.
literally called and said, hey, do you have some time around the holidays? So this really is a busy time for you guys, isn't it? I mean,
it is. You've got all the end of year requirements and RMDs and, you know, tax planning related items. But yeah, John, if we can accommodate and help somebody. Absolutely, we'd love to do that.
If there's signatures needed, we'll bring the wine to your office.
That's not all bad in Christmas time either. I've been known. Hey, we want to just briefly, Susan mentioned, because we like to, you're the host, and we got to keep you happy, talk about oil a little bit. Kevin, we're still seeing some extremely favorable gas prices locally, I believe. And, heck, I know in Champaign, it's been 225, I think it's about the same here, 230. But oil in general still.
The barrel price ticked down just a little. That's just under 57 a barrel. Yeah. I think we were talking last week, we're in the 58 plus, maybe. So, you know, it's pretty stable at the moment. You're not seeing a lot of change there.
I want to talk a little bit about the taxes before we get to break. When we come back, we'll pick back up on it. But Kevin,
well, what kind? There are so many.
Well, this is the bill that I think was in the news so much on Friday, and the Senate version has passed. It's gone now, going to go to committee, where they're going to try to take both plans and merge them into one that could be passed by both houses and then signed by the president. But Kevin, I wanted to touch on a couple of things because I don't think anybody can really talk about exactly what's going to go in there. But by and large, clearly there's some winners in this deal. I think for the most part, it does create a lower tax for most Americans. The top tax bracket has been lowered from 38% or down to 38.5%. So I think there's, from what I read in this thing, there's a lot of good. Clearly, it's the wealthy are going to they're going to gain as well. And I know it's been a sore point for some folks. But corporations, I think that's the area that to me is the one that I'm really most interested in.
And John, that whether we want to believe it or not, that does help all of us. If you give corporations a tax break, that helps everybody. And you can argue this bill's just for the wealthy or it's for all taxpayers. In my view, all taxpayers will benefit to some extent under both the House and Senate proposals. I did want to just comment quickly. In 2005, this isn't the first time we've had a tax break on corporations. In 2005, there was a similar tax holiday. There was a 5.25% one-time tax incentive from a top marginal corporate bracket of 35%, so it came down to about 30.
Mm-hmm.
Just call it 30 for discussion. When that happened in 2005, American businesses repatriated $360 billion
wow.
back in the U.S., so we know it works. It's not that this won't work. If Congress follows through on approximately a 14% tax break, John, that's what it is, you'll see maybe three times as much money come back in the U.S.
Gentlemen, we have to take a break, but I do want to ask a little bit more about something I know
it
affects a lot of people locally that are trying to keep farms in the same hands. And the elimination of that death tax is probably something that comes
up
often with Kingston Wealth Management clients when you're trying to keep everything in the family business. We'll get to those topics and more, but it's 10:30. That means time for news here at WJBC.
News at the
Weather today, partly cloudy with a chance of flurries, high 38, low 19 tonight. Lauren Rainson says clouds again tomorrow, high 29 with the sun peeking through. And on Friday, partly cloudy, high 33. It's Friday night. We might actually see some snow that would stick on the ground through Saturday morning. It's 36 right now. Kevin Kingston, John Ritty in the studio here for WJBC and their offices, in case you were ever going to stop by. You know, we always say that first visit's absolutely free. If you were going to make an appointment and stop by, you all are on Route 9.
Right,
East Empire,
yeah.
Right across from Moe's.
Right across from Moe's, yeah.
That's where
everybody
always,
knows.
I don't know if you always know how often I wave at you.
We look for you.
But did you have any problems getting in or out
this
morning
because
of the traffic?
We did. Unfortunately, what went on had to reroute going the back way. Couldn't really get past the airport. So.
Well, I've just gotten the release form from the press release from the Bloomington Police Department that gives us a little more insight. So to satisfy everybody's curiosity, about 6:45 this morning, the Bloomington Police responded to East Empire and Sierra Drive for a motorist assist. And when they made contact with the driver made statements about having been exposed to anthrax, having no ability to immediately decipher whether or not this was a credible statement or not because of protection and just to make sure they had to call in.
CIRA Drive, meaning right in front of the
Central
Illinois
Regional Airport, CIRA, C-I-R-A, right. And due to that statement, they had to bring in the hazardous materials team with the Bloomington Fire Department, and that's protocol. So based on their evaluation, there was determined no anthrax threat was founded or credible. The patient was transported to a local hospital for unrelated medical complaints, and the Bloomington Police Department and Bloomington Fire Departments want to thank the public for their patience and understanding, because no, it wasn't convenient to shut down that very busy thoroughfare, but there's no threat to the general public. Better to be safe than sorry.
Well, so, good ending anyway.
That's
for the most part.
And we all live happily ever after.
Well, speaking of happily, and we were talking a little bit about the happy tax, hopefully, plan that we get this thing through before too long. Kevin, a couple points that I just want to make, and maybe you respond to it. It talked a little bit about there's some differences right now that have to get hammered out. One of the things that comes to mind is clearly the House wants to eliminate the AMT, alternative minimum tax, and the Senate does not. And it's meeting some issues with, I know the coal industry feels really strongly about eliminating that, and they are really afraid. The Senate plan has said it will really hurt them, and also the fact that they're capping the amount of income or tax that they can write off on their income to about 30% of their income. So there's some issues that still have to get hammered out on this.
Well, and most Americans, John, if anyone's ever been caught, had to pay AMT, would be happy to see it eliminated. I think that the Senate plan, the Senate plan to eliminate it.
Right.
And the House plan
backwards. Yeah, backwards.
House plan is eliminated.
Yep.
Senate wants to raise it, which if they could settle on one or the other, I think either would be fine. You know, just get something done. AMT's like a separate tax code if you've ever looked at it or had to deal with it. I think even many CPAs and tax preparers hate it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a torturous one. That's for sure.
And it's the one that usually makes you end up paying more.
Yeah.
Than your other taxes. But now, my question I had for Kevin: you work with so many people that are sometimes transferring wealth from one generation to another, and that's what's great about what you do for a living. You help people through those ups and downs. So far, what's your thought process on the death tax being eliminated? Will that help people you know that are already already clients?
The Senate proposal would raise the exemption, which is currently roughly $5.5 million. The Senate proposal would raise it double that, so that would eliminate it for all Americans except, I think the last count, about 1,800 American taxpayers might be exposed to that. So that effectively would eliminate it for most of us.
Yeah.
But for those of us in the neighborhood that maybe are part of a farming family, coming into an estate that's worth more than $5 million, isn't that hard to do when you talk about valuable land?
Well, if you had an exemption of $11 million per person, one individual could leave $11 million with no federal estate tax, and then if a couple could transfer $22 million with no estate tax, so that would eliminate a lot of estate tax on family businesses, family farms, and of course there are some family farms and family businesses that would exceed that. But it effectively would eliminate the estate tax for most Americans.
And that would be helpful, I'm sure. We'll talk more about what's going on in the Senate's version of the tax bill, according to Kevin Kingston and John Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management, after this short break here on WJBC.
McLean County's voice.
So let's get back on the air with Kevin Kingston and John Rudy of Kingston Wealth Management. They've been giving us their thoughts about what they know so far about the Senate's version of the past tax bill, even though it all has to be reconciled between the House and the Senate before it's finalized.
Yeah, I will make maybe one more statement on this, and then we got one more topic I want to get to. But, Kevin, I think the one thing that there's a little bit of heartburn on is the elimination of some of the state and local taxes. I know there's some caps and there's some limitations. The larger states are having a problem with that. But, the other side of the coin for the other states that are subsidizing these larger states, it's kind of makes a little sense to me. But that's where people are kind of pushing back a little bit.
And some of that, John, will be offset for many Americans. If you eliminate the state and local tax deduction and you cap the property tax, some of that will be offset by a bigger standard deduction.
The doubling it.
Mm-hmm. So many people may the break even or save a little bit of tax when you calculate all those factors.
So I think one of the word to the wise is let's wait and see what this thing shakes out at when it comes out of the consolidated committee. But I think I would be surprised, at least at this point, if they don't get the deal done right now. I don't know. Would you be surprised if it doesn't get done?
Yeah, it'll be disappointing, yeah. Not only surprising, but disappointing. I did want to comment in the Senate bill, too, John, if many listeners mm-hmm. haven't read that. One good news is their plan, you'd still have the medical expense deduction.
Yes.
And many Americans were concerned.
Is that 10%? You have to, is it, I think that used to be 7.5%, but I think it's 10% of your, anything over 10%, you can start deducting.
Oh, yeah. Last year it was 10%, I can tell you, because I investigated it.
It is. And so, and again, it doesn't hit a lot of folks, but heck, you know, if you're paying a $1,000 a month deductible, and you got a $5,000 or out of pocket, yeah,
big coinsurance, deductible. Yeah. It's not hard to get there for a lot of Americans.
No. Anyway, more to talk about that, but I do, Kevin. There's a topic I wanted to talk to you about because we haven't covered it on this show before, and it deals with when your financial advisor departs, and there's. You know, a lot of things that can come into play with this, but it is
define departs.
Well,
plane or moves to another state.
Let's talk about it. For maybe one of the questions, Kevin, is and we've seen it before. Let's say the person you're working with moves to another firm, another brokerage firm. I mean, there's issues that go along with that. There's things that you need to be sort of prepared for. Talk a little bit about, you've been around this business a long time when you see that happening.
Well, and I think you're mostly talking about where you see that, John, more frequently is an advisor moving from one brokerage firm, wirehouse, if you will, to another. And we don't see it a lot locally, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. And your account stays where you opened it. The brokerage firm that you opened it with, your account's still there, your advisor moves. They may ask you or want you to move the account with them, which mm-hmm. you can do. If you don't, then it may just be randomly assigned to mm-hmm. someone else.
And Kevin, one of the things that I think you see more likely is that, you know, you may be in a situation where you've got a financial advisor who's retiring or getting ready to retire, and that's an issue that I think from a succession planning standpoint, you have taken to heart.
Well, we see more of that locally with wirehouses, brokerage firms. There's more of that going on right now. There's the financial advisory population is an aging population. Like many industries, there's been fewer younger people coming into the industry. So you look around Bloomington, Normal, mm-hmm. there's a lot of advisors that are approaching 70 or maybe in excess, and you're starting to see some retirements occur. But one of the advantages, we believe, of a independent firm, a RIA firm mm-hmm. or RIA affiliate, registered investment advisory firm, typically it's more of a team environment. You know, you have, for our firm, for example, we have some younger personnel.
Sure.
So you plan on more of a succession with younger people involved. Many times, people in wirehouses, brokerage firms, are more solo.
Right.
You know, they try to do it all themselves. They may have an assistant, mm-hmm. But they may not have partners, you know, sometimes, but not usually.
And I know you make it a point to bring the younger guys in to understand the relationship, to get to know those clients who they may be dealing with down the road. And it makes that transition, I think, Kevin, is really what you're really trying to avoid.
I like personally the team environment where you have more than one advisor mm-hmm. and it's more of a team of advisors that work together. And, you know, whether somebody's young or old, that plane can go down or
people
pass
away.
Car accident happens.
Well, I just want to double check since John Rudy, Kevin Kingston, since you're both approaching 50, have you figured out your timeline as to how long you're going to be staying in the business? Because you've planned for retirement so well, I'm sure you could do it at any point in time you choose.
You know, a lot of I think anybody out there listening, if they've got a job that they enjoy doing it, I don't think there is a timeline. I really don't. I think people, if you're enjoying what you're doing, if you're having fun doing it, if you're you're engaged with clients. You know, retirement's a real personal thing. Depending on how much you're enjoying what you do, really, is what it comes down to. So I think in this business, you know, every day with clients and every day meeting their children a lot of times or their family members, it's good business. And so, no, I haven't really thought too much about it personally. And Kevin's a lot older than I am, but maybe he's thinking.
He said that. I didn't say that. He said that.
You know, I will point out one thing, because seriously, the things do happen. We were at our meeting in Orlando, and one of our friends who was at another firm had a partner pass away, longtime partner. Mm-hmm. And I was asking him, how did that impact your business? And he said, well, fortunately, kind of like what you guys do, we had a lot of folks that had knowledge of his clientele, of his business. And right. So it was pretty seamless in how that goes on. But if you're not dealing with that, all of a sudden you lose your confidence in the firm if you feel like you don't know anybody there. So it's a big deal.
As you're saying, John, in that instance, the loss of any one person is tragic, and certainly would be, I think, in our firm. Mm-hmm. But the reality is there's other people involved that can kind of go on.
And as you know, and Kevin, just, we won't get in all the technical, but people's money still remain, if it's custodialized, for instance, you talk about at Schwab, all that right. Stays the same.
I just want to know that Kevin's not the only one that has the password.
Oh, he's got him.
Or the keys.
He's
right?
Got him.
Okay. Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think it's worth, it's a topic we haven't talked about, but I think it's, if you're out there and you've got somebody that you're dealing with, or if you're thinking about it, those are the kind of some of the questions you need to ask. How does your firm handle that? How do you guys work?
All right. Gentlemen, we want people to come in and say hello. How can they do that?
They can reach us at 663-9477 or at KingstonWealthManagement.net. And we've got time this month, so if anybody's out there listening and wants to talk to the guys, give them a call. They're nice.
That is what we want to hear. And we'll be back with more from Kevin Kingston, John Rudy, next Wednesday, 10 to 11, here on WJBC. Securities offered through Valmark's